Hi everyone and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone and welcome to Pixels, a show where we talk about video games. We do this every couple of weeks. We pour through all of the news and information we have and try to find the nuggets of analysis that are to be found in that torrent. I think that metaphor works for once. My name is Patrick Veja and oh hey, looky there, it's Scott Johnson.
Looky Lou, it's Scott Johnson and I like your analogy. It's fine. Whenever I'm getting a torrent of anything,
Michael, you like to look for nuggets or something?
Yeah, looking for nuggets and morsels in my torrents.
Okay, now you're starting to break it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know what? We will soldier on. We have a couple of big topics, the Game Awards and the PlayStation Experience. They're both, I guess, 10 days old, but there are still a couple of things I want to cover on those topics. And then we have a little flurry of newslets from Star Citizen to Tekken 7 getting an unexpected character to System Shock making a return and a bunch of things. So let's dive right into it with the Game Awards, which are a show that is put together by Jeff Keighley, whom you hate. Whose guts you hate, Scott?
I do not hate his guts.
I know. You've actually said to me before the show, this is a literal quote, oh, hey, we're going to talk about that Game Award thing. I really hate Jeff Keighley's guts. Are you saying you didn't say those exact words? All right, I made them up. But yeah,
saying you made those up entirely. I have said this for the record, and I'll make the record clear. Jeff Keighley's kind of announcer man approach, his method or style of how he does an MC job on something isn't my favorite style. To me, it's too old media and it kind of strikes me as less genuine. But then there are times where he totally surprises me and breaks out of that. That doesn't mean I don't like the guy, though. He's fine. It's just not my jazz, you know?
And, you know, I understand what you mean because he's definitely kind of old media. And we have to explain a little bit more what the Game Awards actually are. They come from, he was doing the Spike TV's Game Awards and a bunch of things before that were trying to establish themselves as the industry's awards ceremony in the same way that you have the Emmys and the, you know, the Academy Awards for the Oscars for cinema and things like that. And I think in order to do that, you do have to be a little bit industry-y to an extent, and you have to appeal to a wide audience, and you have to make a spectacle of it. And the really interesting thing with the Game Awards is that he's doing this basically on his own, meaning he doesn't have a big network behind him. He doesn't have a big sponsor that is going to monetize the show in another way or who's going to make sure that the visibility they get out of it is worth the investment. He's trying to pull this out of the ground on his own, meaning he is needing a lot of money from sponsors. And it shows in the show itself. You have, I would say, I don't know, maybe half to two-thirds of it that are basically sponsored that become ads for, you know, you have the NVIDIA super moment where we're going to talk about this, and you have the Battlefront hole where people play Battlefront and they say what they think. And so that makes it a little bit awkward and a little bit TV show awards-y, TV award show-y. But it's better than it was last year, right? What did you?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot better. Well, here's the thing. I have come to terms with this award show in its current form in a way that I wasn't expecting to. So when it was on Spike, I didn't like there was too much polish and not enough real, like, sort of, I don't know. It felt like a big commercial. The problem everyone levies against these shows. And while this new one isn't all that different in terms of its actual announcement / award versus commercial time, is still kind of lousy. But I think I've come to the conclusion that there's no other way to get it paid for. Like, right. Who else is going to make it happen? You either need to be some billionaire who just loves video games and wants to make this like straight up award show that does nothing but quote unquote stays true to the integrity of the medium, which is
what you'll do when you become a millionaire. But until then,
forget it. We're going to have to rely on corporate sponsorship. So, you know, it was obvious that EA had a big stake in pushing Battlefront, and some of the stuff was just more obvious than other things in the awards. But then I also kind of realized award shows in general are nothing more than kind of elaborate
promotional events. Yeah.
Yeah, they really are. Even the Oscars are just ways to get people to see these movies they haven't seen and to push the movie industry and to push stars out in front of people. And like, that's what it is. So I've come to terms with that a little bit more. And I also have come a lot further around to give, I want to give a ton of respect to Keighley for pulling it off. It's clearly,
yeah, I think that's really something that might not be apparent for people who just are used to watching awards shows.
Well, it's just a ton. I just know, just making a podcast or running Nerdtacular or any kind of project that you put your guts and your soul into takes a ton of work, money you didn't think it was going to cost. Like, there's all these things that go into it, and he makes that look relatively easy. And I'm impressed with what they've been able to do, knowing that this is an industry that is going to rely on industry dollars to make it work if you want to have an award show at all. And I think his motives are pretty pure. I think he wants to make a good award show that people come away from entertained. They learn some things about new products coming out, and they get to sort of root for games that they're interested in. Yeah. That being said, I think the categories kind of sucked, and I think the winners kind of blew, and like all those things. But that's an award show problem, not a Jeff Keighley problem or a game awards problem necessarily. It's just sort of the nature of award shows.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, it was better than last time. I have every confidence it's going to be better next time. It's still a very young thing. You know, twice is nothing for something like that, to get the experience and get the ball rolling. So I think you have to know what to expect when you're watching it. But if you do, it was a good offering. So
Yeah, I agree.
But Game of the Year, The Witcher 3, I think that's acceptable. I mean, it's not a very controversial choice, is it? That's not the one you're unhappy about.
No. They're all up in... I mean, the category was littered with other really great games. In fact, it's been a great year generally. There's some really solid experiences out there. And the fact that it was nominated...
I think it might be the best year of video games we've seen in a long time. It's amazing all around.
But argue not since like 98 have we seen a year like this on the whole. There's some holes in it, though, like some problems with the gear in gaming, like there often is. And as the industry gets bigger, it's easier to see those holes. But on the for the most part, it's been a really strong year, and it's hard to think of another year quite like it in recent memory. So I think that's good. And I think that game deserved it. There are plenty of other games that you could have said, well, just as easily, yeah, Metal Gear 5 deserved it. Or, even
possibly
Batman.
I loved it. But
it was really good, yeah. I mean, there's lots of those kinds of games. But yeah. I think that probably given the Fallout 4, one of my favorite games of the year. Having a blast, love Fallout. But I will admit, it's Fallout. Fallout-y as Fallout gets, right? It is Fallout game. And it follows that pattern, and it's basically what we've been getting forever, and that's okay because we love it. But yeah, I think the rightful winner probably got what they deserved here, and clearly Project Red put a lot of money and time and effort and talent into that. Or a CD Projekt, what'd I say?
Project Red.
Say Project Red, which is a totally different thing.
But yeah, and it was kind of heartwarming to see the Polish dude go up on stage and sort of do his little victory lap and speak in Polish for a little bit. It's refreshing. And there was a bunch of other, you know, interesting moments. There were a few reveals, nothing crazy. The Iwata tribute I thought was appropriate. It was nice. The Walking Dead Michonne could get me interested back into that that series. The Far Cry Primal Beastmaster reveal, the fact that your biggest weapons are going to be beasts and not just, you know, stones you throw at enemies because you're in the, you know, Stone Age.
It's a Beastmaster's dream to play that game, it seems like. I expected none of that. I thought we'd just be throwing spears at mammoths the entire game.
Exactly, yeah.
And getting better and better mammoths. And I walked away from that preview going, ooh, I'm going to have, you know, Henry the Cat with me, and he's going to be a huge, awesome saber tooth and all that.
Industry icon, I think shining a light on Westwood Studios was pretty interesting. Their lineage of, you know, with Dune and Command and Conquer being the grandfather of all of the RTS games today, including, you know, Warcraft and Starcraft, and to an extent, you know, they're responsible for the MOBA genre as well. They were acquired by EA in 98. But yeah, so Brett Sperry and Lewis Castle, it's people that on the French version of the show, my co-host said, it's nice that we're not always systematically hammered with the Miyamotos and Kojimas and all of those people who are, you know, perfectly, obviously, icons as well, but shining a light on other people that might have become forgotten a little bit after 20 years of history of video game. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do for the next one next year.
I like that too, because I agree with all of those sentiments, but also I was really impressed with them picking people who arguably invented one of the more lucrative, interesting genres that is actually kind of on the wane. Like the RTSs in their forms are kind of few and far between. If you look at MOBAs and say, well, that's the lineage, well, then that's, I guess that's one way to look at it. But in a lot of ways, we're looking at a dying genre that they helmed, and they still saw how important that was. They still see how that led to so many other things, and not just in RTSs, but other games using, you know, it's a bit like Call of Duty putting in progression mechanics from RPGs, basically, in Call of Duty 4, and blowing everyone's mind with that change. In a lot of ways, top-down RPGs and RTSs have borrowed so heavily from what those guys established that now it's leaking into our shooters and into our, you know, mobile games and experiences. I mean, I don't know that we would have the robust sort of Clash of Clans mobile gluttony out there if it wasn't for the ground laid by these guys. So it was really nice to see these otherwise obscure names get mentioned and talked about. That was pretty cool.
And then we do have to talk about the Konami controversy. Just to summarize it really quickly, Metal Gear Solid 5 got the award for, what was it? I can't even remember. They got the best action-adventure game, and it was Jack Bauer who came and got it. I'm sorry. Kiefer Sutherland. I always forget his name. He came in and received it on behalf of Kojima. And Jeff Keighley then explained why Kojima couldn't be there, and he basically took Konami to task because their lawyers said that he couldn't come to the U.S. to get it. And on paper, he is still an employee of Konami, so they can do whatever the hell they want, and they can prevent him from going there. I think they are probably doing this half out of spite for the way their relationship has gone, and also because they want to have the name of Konami associated with Metal Gear Solid if they want to renew their interest in the franchise in the future. And still, I think it was a really low blow and a scummy move. And I would be curious, Scott, would you have a way of convincing me that it wasn't just scummy and they had a legitimate reason and reasoning behind this? Or is it just...
Well, I have two minds on this.
Okay.
One is, yes, it's a scummy move, and it's a company that is going in a very weird direction. They are clearly getting out of the video games business. No matter how you look at this thing, that is what Konami is doing. They'll try to leverage IPs the best they can or whatever they're going to do, but they're not in the business anymore of making video games. They are in the business of canceling them and diminishing them. And
well, they're doing pachinkos and mobile games and things that are very clearly betraying the roots and the players that have loved them for a long time. And I think that's why the sentiment is so strong. But
I agree. Say goodbye to all of your previous expectations around things like the Metal Gear series or things like Castlevania or a million other IPs that are going by the wayside. That cancellation of that Silent Hills game was super sad for me. I have a lot of fondness for that series. So seeing them do this is frustrating on a lot of levels, and having them just dive, you know, headstrong into where they're making money. And you can't blame a company for trying to put their money put their time where their money's going to be made. And if pachinko's where it's at, great. And, you know, putting aside all the accusations that the Yakuza has something to do with controlling Konami now and all these conspiracies, here's the bottom line for me is, yes, it was a scummy move. There's absolutely zero gain other than bad PR for them to block him from going. It's stupid, silly. Unless they have some reason to believe that Kojima would get in the States and basically stand up and berate them on stage.
Which he wouldn't do. They have lawyers. They have agreements. I mean, he hasn't spoken badly of Kojima, of Konami at this point. And I think they have contracts that are ironclad that prevent him from doing so. That's why, you know, it's all speculation. But
yeah.
And even on the PR side, it is, you know, I can understand they would like their name to be associated with it, but with the award and with Metal Gear Solid. But anyone has been talking about was Kojima. From then on, it was a horrible move on every level.
I completely agree. It backfired. If they think it was smart to keep him in Japan and not do it, it backfired on them, and it looked bad for everybody. On the other hand, though, there is a bit of there's a little Jesusifying of Keighley for basically throwing Konami under the bus on live TV or in a live stream like that. And I'm not so sure that it was that difficult to do, given that there's not much to lose there. I mean, I don't think you'd ever hear him do that out loud to Blizzard, EA, Activision, or anybody who's big in the business and is actively doing things. It's a lot easier to get up there and kind of throw Konami under the bus, because Konami's already on the bus. Like, they're already kind of going away. There's no
They have a couple of wheels that have gone over them already. So you're just at that point. Yeah.
They're not going to block you from all their new betas and the alphas of their hot new game properties. They're not going to say,
because they don't have any.
They don't have any, so it's an easy thing to do. Now, it's a little, I'm not trying to be pessimistic on it or say that whatever, but people are kind of acting like he's some sort of brave soul and this justice warrior. And you know, that's a little far-fetched in my opinion. I think you're just talking about a company who is getting out of video games, made a very poor choice. I'm glad that they were upfront about it. But there's some aggrandizing going on, and it's not his fault. Everyone else is doing it. Again, this is a complaint against the internet, not against Jeff Keighley.
Yeah.
So bottom line is, what he did was the right thing. What Konami did was absolutely the wrong thing. And all this served to do was make the legend of Kojima bigger than ever. And there will come a day where whatever he does next, guaranteed 50% more crowdfunding or whatever it is he got from the shot in the arm. So I guess mission accomplished.
I don't know whose mission. Maybe Kojima and Konami did get into an agreement that Konami would victimize Kojima so that he would come out, you know, aggrandized out of this and could rebound even better. Oh my God. Obviously.
You've uncovered the truth.
I'm getting my tinfoil hat ready. But yeah, about Keighley, I completely agree. You know, it's funny. I basically made the same analysis on the French show a week ago. And it's even more than just he doesn't risk anything by pushing Konami under the bus. It's by, you know, putting his hand on his heart and singing the praises of Kojima. He's kind of making good, or, you know, choosing his side. And Kojima is, as you were saying, going to be doing more very soon. I mean, in mid-2016, he's going to announce a project for another, you know, with another company, or a crowdfunding, very possibly a crowdfunding with whatever Metal Gear, you know, Metal Fear or Liquid Fear or something. And right. And obviously Keighley is going to want to have some kind of reveal at the next thing he does. So I think it's pretty clear that this also plays into it. However, I mean, if you're going to choose a side, I think it was also the complicated thing is, I think it's both. I'm sure it was heartfelt and advantageous from a business standpoint. So It's the kind of thing where you can't really
really win. And it's like, some are going to accuse him of, he's buddying up with Kojima. So whatever Kojima does now, Keighley can't be an objective observer. He can't be trusted as a journalist.
You know, he broke the Metal Gear Solid 5 thing 2 years ago with that Moby Dick Studios, where he revealed the thing with a video where, do you remember that thing?
Yeah, kind of vaguely, yeah.
Yeah. It was basically Kojima in a makeup thing with bandages all over himself, and they were announcing The Phantom Pain, which was a game no one had heard about, and, you know, very quickly people figured out it was Metal Gear Solid 5. But anyway, so, yeah, it's I would I agree with what you're saying, and I agree that Keighley would never have been that abrasive with EA or Activision or a company like that, obviously, and hey, with reason. Yeah, it's not even
absolutely with reason. You can't have. I mean, that. But see, this is where people have the problem in general with the whole award show in general. And I understand their point of view. I just don't know how else you do it. But their problem with it is like, well, EA is paying for your iJustine spots in the middle of the show, and they're doing that with, you know, on the back of trying to push Battlefront or whatever. You can't then in the next segment have Keighley get up and go, and we're very disappointed in EA for not allowing so-and-so to come to this thing. Like, that would never conceivably happen, or else you wouldn't have gotten the deal in the first place.
Yeah. And even if you want to get super, super negative, even the Iwata tribute, he's doing good with... I mean, it was an excellent tribute. I think it was on point. It was perfect. But also... Nintendo was very present at the show. So,
yeah, they were.
It's kind of... Anyway, I mean, obviously, he's not going to... In English, you say, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. And in some other language, I'm sure people say, you don't pee in the pot you drink from.
What do you say in France? And what do you say... How do you say it in French?
What's the expression in France?
You guys have one, you have to have one. Like, you don't use the same guillotine twice or something like that.
That would make it very inefficient. You know, the guillotine was actually running very night and day when it was needed. So yeah. I don't think, although it would give work to guillotine makers, they're forgotten nowadays. So
oh, that poor industry just totally hit a bubble and exploded. And where are they now?
All right, PlayStation Experience. It happened the day after, I think. There was a bunch of things that were shown. There were some reveals. The last character in Street Fighter V, Battleborn, was shown in more details. It's basically a hero shooter. They really wanted you to know there's a solo campaign in that game because they're seeing every other hero shooter showing up, and they want to make sure that people are interested in this one. I was interested when I saw it. When I wasn't initially, the single player campaign could do it. Confirmation that Yakuza Zero is coming to PlayStation in the West. A lot of PlayStation VR, some ridiculously stupid stuff like the 100-foot robot golf.
That is my most excited announcement from the PSX. That is the one I'm most interested in from a VR perspective, because I'm telling you, you and I are gonna have a conversation after that's out and we both have been playing it, and we're gonna have to have another show. We're gonna have to talk about this, because my belief is the best VR experiences are going to be the ones that on first glance seem like goofy ideas, and the ones that are like,
they have that covered for sure.
But the idea that you could be towering over a city, playing golf through that city, so that your course and your obstacles are cars and buildings and moving trucks and all the things that happen, is a work of genius. It fulfills a very specific childhood sort of fantasy of mine of being gigantic. And it's going to do it in a way
that you're already gigantic. You're like 15 feet tall.
Well, that would be horrible, actually, if that was true, but it's going to give me something to do that no other game can let me do right now, and I'm very excited about that game.
Okay,
like genuinely, not just even ironically, I'm very excited about playing 100-foot robot golf.
So more than Ace Combat 7, which is going to be a PlayStation VR exclusive.
Yes, more than that.
Okay,
now I'm sure that'll be fine, and I'll probably suck up as many VR experiences as I can early on, but I don't. You know, being in the cockpit of another plane or another ship or something, we're going to get plenty of those. Trust me.
That's true.
But how many times can I be a giant robot trying to get par on a course that's a city? It's amazing.
All right. Fair enough. Anyway. We also had the big hitters, a video for Uncharted 4, which looks, oh my God, so incredible. I can't wait for that game. The announcement that Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to be a full remake. It's going to be completely different from the actual port, which is available now, by the way. It's going to have an active combat system, which seems reminiscent of Final Fantasy XV's. Ni no Kuni 2. If you've never seen a video, a trailer for Ni no Kuni, go watch it. Be amazed. And then seek out the Ni no Kuni 2 trailer, which is Basically, it's a Studio Ghibli movie that you can play, and it looks so freaking good. It is unbelievable. Have you been?
Where are you at on the first game? Did you like the first game?
So, okay, that's the thing. It wasn't a great game. It just looked awesome.
Yeah, I'm kind of all right. So I'll echo that statement and say, while I played it, there were moments of absolute utter joy, and I couldn't believe how cool it was. And then there were times where I was like, oh, overworld, and these fights
it's a Japanese RPG.
Yeah,
sure.
It is that. So if they came to me and said, Scott, we're taking that world, those characters, that style, that animation, that Ghibli stuff, and we're going to apply some more sort of Western RPG values to it, I would be so into this announcement that you could barely hold me back. As it stands right now, I need to wait and see what people say.
So, yeah, I think, I don't think it's going to be a good game. And that's not where my excitement lies. My excitement lies more in the idea. I think, if I remember correctly, when we were covering E3 a few months ago, you said something along the lines of, I can't believe that a game like Cuphead exists, that we have this game, this video games can now create graphics that are like those animations from, the 30s that we can actually play, and that is the game, right?
Yeah.
And this does the same thing for me. With Ni no Kuni 2, it's so, it's the animations that I was watching 20 years ago that were so incredible and so amazing, and now we're actually playing that. It's kind of fulfilling the fantasy of that has been in the back of our minds for a long time. Now, again, I'm not sure the game is going to be too exciting to the level that the graphics are.
Yeah, you're probably right, and I'm sad to admit that you're probably right, but. But it was super cool, that first game, and the second game has potential, so I will wait and see. But if they tell me it's just another 70-hour rinse and repeat JRPG with the kind of those same trappings, then I'm probably not as checked in on that game as I'd like to be. Right. But I definitely would watch like playthroughs, and I would definitely be interested in where that story goes. I mean, the cutscenes alone are almost worth the time I spent with it. It's a hell of a thing. We'll see how it goes. I don't, again, they have to be true to its roots, or else whoever loved the first game aren't going to be happy.
Yeah, but they could make it better. I understand. Paragon, that new MOBA by Epic, was also unveiled. It piqued my interest a little bit more than the ridiculous stereotypical characters that were revealed in the teaser a week before. But actually, it's a MOBA. It seems a third-person shooter, or even first-person shooter-y, kind of like Tribes, was it? Or no, not Tribes. The thing... Smite, there you go.
Oh, Smite. Right.
So curious there as well. But definitely for me, the big thing was Uncharted 4. It looks, what Naughty Dog does best is emotion in their movie. Emotion and, it's really narrative, it's storytelling, and making you feel like you're playing that, weird mix of Tomb Raider and Indiana Jones thing. And it seems the way it looks and the way it feels, it is, it seems like they're doing more of that The Last of Us magic. And I'm admittedly a huge fan of the type of game. So, but I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I'm super jazzed. That looks awesome. Sad as I was to not have it by now, because originally it was planned for this month, or actually last month, I guess we'd have had it in November. I like that they're taking their extra time with it. It's their last hurrah for that team. I don't think that's the end of Uncharted, but I don't think that team at Naughty Dog will be doing another Uncharted. At least they've said as much. So give us one final amazing masterpiece, and I'm all in. And it also kind of, ruins this little bit of a drought of, that Lara Croft game not being on multi-platforms for the first year. And that's frustrating to me because I think that that game needs to be in the hands of more people. I think it limits the appeal of that game because, you know, not everyone can get it. And
by the way, Tomb Raider is apparently not doing great. It's around 200,000 sales, which, of course, it's only Xbox One, but 200,000. And the first one was at 600,000 at that point, and it was considered a failure. So,
yeah,
I mean, they got paid by Microsoft for sure, but
Oh yeah. And there's no way they would have done this exclusivity thing without that deal. But I'm really sad about to even hear that. And I'd heard this too, but I'm really sad to hear that news because by all accounts, it's incredible. Like really, really well done. A better game and a great sequel in every respect. And to limit its availability like that frustrates me because it's based purely on sort of marketing moves and how do we position our thing? And I wouldn't turn down Microsoft money either if I were them. So it's not really a problem with them. It's just the way this stuff goes sometimes, and artificial exclusivity rubs me the wrong way. All that being said, I'm sure it'll still be a great game when it hits PC and I can run it in, you know, full 60 frame glory. And
it doesn't bother me that much. The thing that surprises me, I got my Xbox One for that. And the year is so incredible in games that I still haven't had time to really dive into it. I've played maybe 5 hours. And at the same time, an argument could be said that it's not holding my interest enough that I want to play more. I'm definitely going to play it, but it's just it's the worst possible combination for that game. And it's too bad because I thought the first one was amazing. And I'm sure this one is just as good. But maybe that's the problem. It's not significantly better.
Yeah, well, it's not enough to drive me to buy an Xbox One, which is I think what they wanted it to do. They were hoping between, you know, the Halo crowd and you know, people looking for more of an action adventure game were going to be the way that they would kind of close the gap this holiday season, and I don't think it did it.
I think they made that deal at a time when things were a little bit different. I mean, the Xbox One is not doing badly by any means, but if people are going to be choosing between PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, if there isn't already something that they really want on the Xbox One, the momentum of the PS4 probably means more people have a PS4 and their friends have PS4s. And so Tomb Raider is not going to be enough of an incentive to change their choice. So... Yeah. Anyway,
I agree with that. It's a strange place to be for Microsoft. Sony, I hope, doesn't squander their, I think, kind of lucky lead that they have right now. And by the end of all this, it'll be very interesting to see if we see sort of a catch up from Microsoft at the end of this cycle, the way we did with PS3 and 360, or if this huge gap continues to be a problem. I don't know.
Honestly, I think it's the issue that Microsoft's going to have is the PlayStation VR. There's, let's say, a 50-50 chance that VR really takes off next year and the year after that. Mm-hmm. And Sony has their project there. And it's going to be a selling point. It's going to be a factor. So that's why I think the PlayStation is going to keep their lead and possibly even increase it, even though Microsoft has been doing really well this year and they have some amazing games coming next year, or games that look amazing coming next year. But I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yep. Tells.
What?
I said time tells all tales.
It does tell all tales. And you know what it also tells? It tells us that Star Citizen has reached $100 million in funding right at the time that the naysayers are being rebuffed by the release of the Alpha 2.0, where you can actually do a bunch of stuff. So thankfully, we're finally seeing some progress on development on Star Citizen. And I guess, you know, the people who want to see it as horrible vaporware that is a, you know, pyramid scheme, they're not going to be, you know, convinced by this. And those who are all in, full on with Star Citizen are basically flipping the bird to everyone else saying, "See, told you it was real." And they're having fun in their game. So...
Yeah, it's a weird. It's nice to see. I'm still not entirely convinced that that, I mean, man, that game better be good. Like, they've set themselves up. They've done this amazing crowdfunding work, right? Like, unprecedented in terms of, like, scope and reach and interest and all those things. I'm very interested in that game. At the same time, you've got games that are that have come at a much simpler way, like Elite Dangerous, which is highly regarded. They just added their, I forget what they call it, but their expansion where you can land on planets and
Horizons
stuff.
Horizons,
that's it. Hold on a second. Something just spilled.
Aw, Scott. You know, I just tried Elite Dangerous. I went on that that Steam sale buying spree, and that was one of the games I got. I'm not liking the Rebel Galaxy at all thing that you
really suggested. Not at all?
No, I don't know. It's got a weird, it feels, I don't know, it feels weird. But Elite Dangerous, I've just done, you know, a few of the training missions, and it there is a breath of space that gets into you when you play that game. It's different from Star Citizen, though. Star Citizen is so ambitious. It feels almost unattainable, but for what they're planning to do, 100 million doesn't even seem like it's, you know, unreasonable at all.
I can't believe I steered you wrong with the game. I can't believe I told you to get a thing that you didn't like at all. What is it you didn't like about it? I'm just curious.
I don't know. I just played it for 15 minutes and it didn't gel. But I'll have to try it again and tell you exactly what happened with that Rebel Galaxy.
I freaking loved it. I mean, I realize it's not. So here's the thing. I mean,
Rebel Galaxy, little bit too bare bones, it feels, you know?
Well, the scope is definitely not the scope of those other games. However, I would actually argue my experience with Elite Dangerous is that it's got better scope than that, because I've actually got a story to do. Things seem to make more sense in terms of why am I doing this and who am I doing it with? Whereas Elite Dangerous is just a sort of lot of exploration, which is pretty cool, but not much else, like rinse and repeat kind of quests, and there's nothing about them that really jumps out and makes me go, wow. Mm. So what I want Star Citizen to be is the perfect combination of simulation, but not too much of that, right? I don't want to be constantly worried about what flight stick I have and which pitch and yaw and all that BS. Give me a controller that works or a keyboard setup. That's what I want. Is I want to be able to play your game, not try to play your game.
Okay? So you don't want to spend 15 minutes aligning the landing pad perfectly every time you dock, is what you're saying?
Absolutely do not want to do that ever in my space simulation games. Now, there are people that do, though. And for them, I would point them toward Elite Dangerous. It's a little more toward that play style. What I want is something that is gameplay friendly and also looks insane and is huge in depth and all of that. Star Citizen has been promising this since the get-go, but I am one of those absolutely, especially at this rate where we're now at $100 million and expectations are so high, I desperately want to know if the payoff is there or not.
Well, the Alpha 2.0 looks like it's doing a lot of things. You have a bunch of modules that you can go and explore. There's a bunch of things you can do. I mean, we're obviously not there yet. It's still very early stage, but at least it's progressing. And that was sorely needed for Chris Roberts and his company to show that they're not just, you know, buying houses in the Bahamas and spending all the money that they're getting on that. So
it does seem like they're making a video game to me.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were really concerned about that. And anytime lots of money is involved in anything, there's always people freaking out.
And delays, but this is video games.
Sure. Welcome to the world of video games. And they know the expectations. Like, if they've got that kind of money and it's still building up and they're still hitting milestones, they probably have pretty regular meetings where they're like, all right, well, we didn't expect to be at 80. So we need to talk about what that means. Are we going to add this? Are we going to do this or whatever? But people who buy like 20 grand worth of fake ships and with real money and are, that's how they're supporting this thing. I don't ever want to be in the same 4 mile radius as people like that because they terrify me.
Okay.
they're scary. That's weird to spend 20,000 American dollars on a video game that doesn't exist yet for ships that aren't real. I just can't imagine that. Like, that's fandom for nothing. It's like being a fan of a thing that, might
you happen. I agree. But I have a friend who made an eye-opening description of Pinterest to me a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago. He said Pinterest is a way of getting half the pleasure of the purchase without actually purchasing anything. So you're collecting stuff. It feels like you're getting them, but you're not really. But it doesn't matter. You're getting part of the pleasure of it. And I think the buying the ships and all of this, and you know, it's true in many other avenues of our geeky lives. They're getting the pleasure from that, and of course they want to play them once the game is available. But they're and 20,000 is a lot of money. But you know, you get my meaning, right?
Well,
it's kind of collecting the things.
If you've got money to just throw at things, I guess I don't have. You know, I don't know what I would say to them. I guess you've got the money. I guess you can go ahead and do it. It just, from my point of view, just seems so crazy. But whatever, they're getting what they're going to get. There's always the hardcores, the fringes. And if this makes it a better game, if all this extra money goes to that end,
and we great. and we all benefit from it.
So. But don't you feel like at some point there's going to be some, I don't know, I hope I'm wrong, but there's going to be some kind of like uproar. Like, this isn't nearly what
they said. The uproar has happened this year. People were pissed. And I think now they're on the right track again. I hope so. But anyway, let's talk about Electronic Arts, an uncontroversial company. Actually, they're pretty good recently. They are launching an esports division, and Peter Moore is going to be taking the helm of that division. And that's following Activision Blizzard opening an esports department, an actual third company for their holding? No, I don't know what Activision Blizzard is. It's a third part of the whole thing, which led me to wonder if esports, if something is happening in esports in 2016. And I know that, you know, snarky people are going to go, esports has been happening for a long time, Patrick. Get your head out of your bottoms. And I know, you know, I watch Twitch. I'm not an idiot. I'm just wondering if there isn't something that's happening to a different level. Is those big companies seem to be getting involved in a big way. And I'm wondering if this isn't going to bring it to even more, I don't know, something like taking it to the next level. And I was listening to the Angry Chicken a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying, talking about where you go to watch esports. And I realized I would be interested in esports. I would love to watch stuff, but there's no easy way. There's no highlight reel. There's no, you know, easy way of getting and seeing the tournaments that have been happening. It's all, you have to seek it out on the replays on Twitch. And sometimes there are specific sites and you find them on YouTube. It's horrible. There is no, it seems like a mess that is ripe for adults to come in and clean it up.
Yeah, it seems like an ESPN style approach, which would cover live games as well as highlights, talk about upcoming tournaments, you know, footage from other plays, shows that then support the various games and talk about strategy, interview the players themselves, like that kind of arrangement that we already sort of have for a wide range of sports coverage. I think they would really benefit from that. The question is everything at a point now? Are we at a critical mass where that can happen both financially and logistically? And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, we're seeing some of that stuff get started here with TBS doing their own esports show, which starts soon.
I don't think it has to go on TV. You know, that's
It doesn't have to be TV at all. It could totally be internet. But my point is, like, they've got to curate that stuff in a way, even more so on the internet, because they've got to say, all right, well, we need to have a way for people to quickly get to all the highlights if they want to just
stuff. How is there not a weekly esports YouTube show that, you know, half an hour to an hour shows all of the highlights, what's been happening in the different esports? And surely that there would be people to watch it. And maybe there is one, but
I don't know about it either. It's like if there is one, they're not great about letting people know.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if they did, let's assume that there is that, or that there's somebody thinking about doing that. There's a real challenge trying to convince a League of Legends player that he also needs to sit through some content that deal with, you know, Counter-Strike global operations or something.
No, it would be a journalist type person, a host, you know, that would, it's not, it, I think there would be people who are passionate about esports who could, you know, host a show, a half an hour show to discuss all esports and not just League of Legends.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. In fact, I'm 100% with you. I just wonder if it doesn't exist yet. I'll bet there's some things we're not thinking about in terms of how that audience is different. And maybe the only way to deal with that is let's say it's a YouTube channel, which affords you the ability to say, well, one whole playlist is nothing but our coverage of League of Legends matches and our live coverage or whatever, and this whole other channel is nothing but Counter-Strike and this other one's over.
No, but what I want is to discover all of the amazing things happening in esports. I don't want to see just the League of Legends thing. I want to have one show that basically does for tech news or gaming news, which we're doing for gaming news. You listen to the Boop Show or Pixels or both, and you know more or less everything that's happening. And same with, you know, a bunch of tech news shows. Why isn't there a specific, maybe it's not time to have something specialized enough yet that is an esports news show, or I don't know. And I want to watch it. I want to see it. It's like if there was if I was interested in sports, which is not the case. I don't care.
It seems like you could do it with a couple of guys.
Exactly.
With a little bit of experience, some decent lighting and cameras, and some highlight reels and some, you know, daily news collection or weekly news collection. Like, you could totally do it. I could see this being done, geez, even as a, you know, even as a podcast. Sports radio is a huge deal in the States. Like, why this doesn't exist yet as a mainstream podcast, I don't know.
And this is what I mean when I'm saying I think something might happen in 2016, because esports is big. I mean, it's big, not big. esports is big for people who like esports, who are passionate about esports, who are going to go and watch all the finals and all the matches and all the championships for League of Legends or, you know, Hearthstone or whatever. Yeah. It's not, there's a huge population of gamers who could be interested in all of this, but don't have easy access to it. So anyway.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Overwatch is going to get all of its heroes and maps and game modes for free after launch. That was a big controversy, or not controversy, but a big unknown in the Overwatch community. People were asking Blizzard if they were going to monetize those aspects of the game, which would then split the community between the ones who did get them and those who didn't. I, for one, was certain, just as I was certain that the game was going to be free to play, I was certain there was going to be monetization of heroes, at least. And Jeff Kaplan has come out in a video, in a developer video, and said they will not be charging for the additional heroes. They will patch into the game, and same thing for the maps and modes, game modes. That blew my mind a little bit, but I guess it's a good thing.
I think it's a huge surprise. I thought I was kind of with you that there would be some DLC or character buying or micropayments, something down the road. Like I just couldn't imagine that this was just going to be more like the old Quake model or the old Unreal model, which was like, here's the core game. It's all just for the price you pay. And then later we're going to add maps and modes and mutators and cool things. And you can have all that too. Like, I thought those days were behind us. That companies would just monetize everything always forever forward. And that seems to be not the case here, which I'm partially excited about that, but also I feel like I'm waiting for another shoe to drop. Because on the other hand, they've been doing some weird stuff in their games that are their free-to-play models.
Here we go, the Vulture again.
I don't want to even get into it too detailed, but that Vulture thing was kind of a mess.
It was a miscalculation for sure. The Vulture thing... we discussed it on the instance last week, and I think it's pretty obvious that that was a mistake. It wasn't like they were thinking this is going to... I mean, it wasn't like they were thinking this is how it's going to play out and it's going to be great. Right. They thought it was going to be play out a different way, and when they realized this is how it is playing out, they're like, oh, crap, we have to fix this.
Yeah, and I'm fine with, you know, everyone screws up or has an idea that doesn't exactly hit the community right or whatever. All those things are fine. But just generally, their pricing structure has been a little bit weird. They on the one hand, have a Black Friday sale where all heroes and skins are 50% off. And then 2 days later, when it was supposed to end, they said, and we're extending it almost all the way through December 18th or whatever it is. And so then you're like, oh, well, I guess I rushed for nothing. Okay, fine. That's cool. People can get a deal for longer. And then they have a bundle that says last or second chance deal. It's on some skins and
mounts.
You
know what?
Yeah.
I think this is very specific to Heroes, Heroes of the Storm. And totally. I think that game might be struggling a little bit.
It might be. We talked about this on Core, my show about Heroes of the Storm. And that was one of the things I had put forward, is that maybe they're clearly... Look, it's a crowded market. It's dominated by League, and then to a lesser extent, Dota right behind it, but not really right behind it. There's a huge gap between those two games.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's Heroes trying to be third tier. And that's hard to do. I think their expectations may have been a little high. And I think that they should probably start lowering those a little bit and let this thing grow more slowly and organically rather than trying to sell prices into oblivion, because it's getting weird. The perception is weird. Whether or not the facts on the ground are the same, I don't know. But the perception is all this price slashing, second chance skin deals, and then saying, "Oh, I was actually we were going to put that on the store by itself anyway." And then I'm like, "Well, wait, I just spent $18. Now you want me to, you told me I could have gotten it for $5, and you didn't, like there's just a lot of weird hooky jukey kind of It's like going to Tijuana and trying to buy a purse. Like you can't just go in and buy a purse. I'm getting, juked and jived the whole time. So
yeah.
I don't know what that's about, and I don't know why it's happening exactly, but I know that I love that game, and I know that it has a growing base, and they have the best chance of anyone in this business to be a third important MOBA. They really do. But it may not be reaching what they think they need to reach, and I don't know what that means long term.
Well, I've been playing Abathur a little bit. I'm enjoying that.
Nice. Just,
yeah. Which I got during the sale, by the way. I bought him, but
good.
Back to Overwatch.
Yeah.
Anyway, Heroes and Maps free, awesome. Everyone's happy. The beta is over, and my life feels empty and hollow. And I can't wait until it's back.
You're telling me, but it is interesting that in these announcements at PSX and also at the Game Awards, it's interesting to start to see how many other games are priming themselves to be Overwatch competitors and alternatives. And I would even say that new thing from Epic, even though it's more purely a MOBA, is very rooted in the Heroes sort of thing. The Overwatch sort of thing. And what's the other one?
Paladins?
Paladins.
Or Battleborn?
Battleborn, rather. Yeah, the one from the battle, from those guys. That is so Hero, or it's so
Gearbox.
Overwatch.
Gearbox.
And when I saw these games in their earlier alpha stages, they looked nothing like Overwatch. They all suddenly look like Overwatch in the aftermath of Overwatch being playable. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if they have the time development wise to switch gears that quickly, but
Battleborn's suspicious to me. Just a little suspicious, that's all.
Maybe. I think, it did look kind of quirky in that way before, and we've been seeing it for a while. But I've played Paladins, and thanks to the person who got me into the beta, by the way, that was very, very kind of you. And Paladins, which is the game from Hi-Rez, they're the ones who made Smite. So they have experience with MOBAs. And on paper, it might seem like it's kind of the same space as Overwatch, but having played it, I played for, I don't know, I guess 5 hours, 3 to 5 hours, something like that. So I'm not an expert, but I have a little bit of experience.
Yeah, that's enough time to make a pretty good call.
Yeah, and it is so far from Overwatch in terms of accessibility. And it's much closer to the MOBA model. You have a base that you're defending, and you go to a point, and the point you fight for control, and then it spawns a payload that goes to your base and to the enemy's base and destroys their walls. And there are two walls and a final, chest treasure thing. It looks, it's competent in everything it does, but there are so many things that are, and maybe it's my love for Blizzard talking, but so different in so many ways from Overwatch, and in not in good ways. First of all of the characters from Paladins are FPS, shoot people in the face characters. There are small variations, but usually they're shoot people in the face and that's it. And you have like 7-9 characters and that's all they do. And you have one that puts down a totem and one that puts down a shield. But it's very, it's a side thing from the main part of the game. And then you have things that I just don't really understand. The payloads go so fast. You're constantly trying, basically they go faster than your character runs. So I guess there's a gameplay reason for it, but so that, you know, you have to rush after it and try to destroy it before it reaches your wall, and the enemies are, but then you have to go on your mounts all the time, and it's weird. And the character design is, you have the guy in the giant, in the small robot, and it's like we were talking about the penguin in my other show for Battleborn. And you have the penguin character that was revealed at the PSX. And the penguin is like a penguin that's evil. So wouldn't it be funny if the penguin was actually cute and cuddly, but mean? And it's so basic. And I understand the shtick, but... And it's not like Overwatch has some incredibly deep and complex, you know, character... psyches, but it's just it's the painstaking care that Blizzard puts in all of their games. It's not just Overwatch. Whether you like the games or not, it shows that they worry about every single little detail. It does make Overwatch, I think, different in gameplay and in design and in many ways. And those other games, they're great for people who like those types of games, but I think Overwatch is going to appeal to different people because it's deeper and more involved, in the same way that Hearthstone has appealed to more people than just card players because it was more accessible and the interface was better and the, you know, all of those things. So,
yeah, I agree with you. And I don't, well, Overwatch hit me in every way as something special. Everything I've seen from everybody else, even those who I haven't had a chance to play with, which obviously is where the real rubber meets the road, just are not doing it for me in that same way. And it's not to say that there isn't room for what's happening. It's just that Overwatch surprised me with its not feeling like a shooter, but also feeling like a shooter all the time. And I don't even know how to explain the feeling I'm having with that game. It's not a MOBA, though. It's not exactly a pure shooter. It's some other thing. And I think that's enough for them to be a pretty unique point of light in an otherwise getting crowded again shooter market. Shooters are making a shift. I don't know if anyone's noticed this, but for a long time there, from mid-aughts till now, we've been pretty, for the last 10 years or so, pretty mired in mostly military-based shooters that are based on more realism.
I think people have noticed, yeah.
And then, yeah, you may have noticed a few of those. But you may notice right now a big upsurgence in let's go stylized, let's be a little goofy, let's go a little crazy with weapon types and the effects and how they work and how you can jump and getting away from the abject realism. Even the bastions of realism, like Call of Duty, have decided to go future war tech, which makes them quite unrealistic. You know, they may be future realistic based on what we think the future might be, but it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the gritty war movie type of thing anymore.
Yeah, and I'm thrilled personally that we're making a swing back towards sort of the Quake and Unreal style world that I used to love in shooters. So
yeah,
no matter what people are making, I say bring it. We could use more, and it's all good
for sure. And but yeah, I guess for Overwatch, I'm getting the same tingly feeling that I was getting for Hearthstone when I first got to play it in the Company Alpha. And I don't know if that's going to translate into the public when the release actually happens, but it's for me, it's rare that I get that kind of feeling for a game, and I'm excited. Anyway, you know what else I'm excited for?
Hold on. The giant wine and cheese convention's coming to town finally. You guys are going to finally get your wine and cheese on. No,
I'm excited for that as well. But however, Akuma is coming to Tekken 7. That was a reveal a couple of days ago, and we're still not getting Tekken X Cross versus Street Fighter. But there's one Street Fighter character coming to Tekken 7. All right, fine, whatever. No one cares. I like Tekken. I just wanted to mention it.
Do you feel like it's a concession for not doing that crossover?
I think Yoshiori Ono and Katsuhiro Harada, who are the producers for both games, have been very chummy lately. And maybe that's that. But I think it might also be the fact that they really enjoy each other's company and they see it as a cross-promotion type of thing to an extent. And a way of raising interest in Tekken, because honestly, let's be clear, it's the popularity of Tekken is nowhere near where it was before, and it hasn't swung back in the way that Street Fighter has. So, yeah, I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I just think it's funny because since that never happened, this feels like maybe a little bit of a...
Well, Tekken has had a history of integrating other games or franchises' characters in the past, so it's not, you know, that incredible for Tekken. But
it's not unheard of, you might say. Yeah,
exactly. Do you remember Gon? Were you playing Tekken 3 where Gon was in there? The little dinosaur dude?
I do remember that.
It was so annoying. It was swirling around with his tail going in your feet.
Oh, those are some fun times in Tekken, though. You know, like weird, like bears and polar bears, and just such a weird time in that game.
As much as I'm looking forward to Tekken 7 coming to PlayStation, I don't think it's going to be quite that the return of that period. So
probably not. I mean, if, I don't know. It's almost like it's like where RTSs are right now. A little bit, fighting games are.
I don't know. Street Fighter 4 has managed to bring it back to the forefront of people, or, you know, gamers who are into fighting games have come back with Street Fighter 4, and I think Street Fighter 5 might increase that that popularity again, but not where it was, you know, in the 90s, but
no, but they've done it. But to me, it feels like the Street Fighter, okay, Capcom is the Blizzard. Okay, Capcom is to fighting games what Blizzard is to RTSs. They're the only company that could come along in 2010 and say, new StarCraft, take the world by storm. Otherwise, nobody really cares about RTSs right now.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're right, you're right.
And I feel like that's them for fighting games, which is good. I hope they never stop. I mean, we need that kind of thing for genres that don't have the same fervor they once had. I mean, there'll be a day, I don't know when it'll be, but one day, you know, we'll look at MOBAs as they are today and go, those are dumb.
Oh, we got this day can't come soon enough.
I see how you feel.
I don't know. Heroes, I play it from time to time. As I was saying, I'm enjoying Abathur because, you know, I can be the Abathur hat on people. I'm not playing. So do I have to play Abathur himself as well in order to be good? Or can I just park myself somewhere and switch from someone else, you know, from other people in my team and help
his whole strength is that there's a few ways to play Abathur, but the way that most people play him is as a hatting character, or he's directly augmenting another player. So almost think of it as like almost two people controlling a character. So he may Thrall and then suddenly Thrall super powerful. So he's more like this weird augmentation character and less of a direct. Well, he'll never direct, like, you don't ever want to go toe to toe with anyone.
I shouldn't be controlling Abathur, you know, switching from Abathur to the hat to Abathur and doing things and, you know, controlling his little lane pusher little things at the same time. Or
right. You can do those things at the same time, but that's the thing that you just, over time, you'll get better at, like, sort of managing it, because he's very micromanaging. And it's great because he's a very specific style that I'm glad the game supports. It's not for me because I am terrible at that, at the micro, but I'd rather go, you know, give me a sword, give me a whatever, and let me go in. But having an Abathur on my head is often the difference between life and death. So I don't want you or your people to ever go away.
Excellent. You know what it has gone away but is coming back? It's System Shock. System Shock 3 was basically leaked to Oblivion. The official announcement hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. But System Shock was an RPG, first-person action RPG thing from 1984, the first one. And if you don't remember how long ago 1984 was, it was before there was Windows 95.
Well, I like to think of it as when Temple of Doom came out, but maybe that your way is better.
The reason I'm saying this is that Windows 95 was when PCs became like real computers, and people will fight me on this, but developing a game before Windows 90, actually even after Windows 95, it was a nightmare on PC. But anyway, it's a point in time that I usually reference. System Shock 2 was 99. I sort of missed that whole thing, so I'm not really getting the big deal for System Shock 3. It was, you know, developed by Ken Levine, to whom we owe the BioShock.
BioShock games, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the second one was Ken Levine. The first one was Warren Spector, and it was basically Origin Systems, which is another legendary company. But System Shock has left the hands of Ken Levine at that. Nowadays, it's someone completely different that has it. Okay, it's apparently a big deal for people.
He tried to have it for a while, because BioShock came out of his desire to keep making a System Shock-like game.
Exactly. And you might notice the similarity in the name there.
Yeah, the name alone might give it away. But they are also very similar, not necessarily thematically. It's one of the things BioShock did really well is create atmosphere and things that we hadn't really seen before. But their structures are very similar.
Tapes, man.
Yeah, amazing, right? What was his name? Ryan, whatever his name was. Anyway, doesn't matter. Underwater guy.
that's his name.
Yeah, underwater guy. I really like those games a lot, and I liked System Shock okay, but System Shock 2 specifically came out at a time where I didn't really care for what I perceived to be an overly complicated game. I look back on that now, and I just think I was being kind of a wuss, and I was more interested in just shoot, boom, boom, you know, Quake-style action or whatever. And to me, those games represented a separation from that, and I didn't like that. I think I would have liked System Shock better with the gaming tendencies I have now. So the idea of a new System Shock game is exciting to me from the perspective of, well, now I can properly play a System Shock game. But as far as like having any devotion to the series, I guess I don't have the same that everyone else has.
Yeah, same here. I'm interested. I was living in Japan at the time, so it really wasn't... I was more into consoles and arcade. I would spend a lot of time in arcade, in famous arcades in Japan, in Tokyo. But yeah, anyway, well, I'll check it out. I mean, I loved BioShock, so.
Yeah, great game.
Bunch of small, quick hardware news. Valve and HTC are delaying the launch of their HTC Vive to April 2016. So, yeah, not a big surprise, but 2015 is barely going to see any... But there were supposed to be some developer kits available in 2015, and none of them are going to be available. It's all 2016 now.
Wow.
And, now, even more interesting than that, Nintendo has applied for a patent where, how can I even describe this? You've probably seen the pictures. Basically, it's a controller where the entire front face is a screen. It has two little joysticks coming out of it, but everything else is a touchscreen. And this is kind of interesting because it relates to another piece of news we've heard from last year, which was the fact that Nintendo is buying variable screens that don't have a square, basically square or different sizes that can be, they're usually used for dashboards and things like that. And those were supposed, we guessed those were going to be for their quality of life device that is they're apparently developing as well. But maybe it's for a controller or a portable console or something with those weird shapes of screens. I still think it looks dumb, though.
Well, okay, but it's consistent with what Nintendo sometimes does is they bring out the thing that looks super dumb. And sometimes they really hit with it, and sometimes it remains dumb. You know, you could argue the Wii U has remained a little bit dumb. No one's really
a lot dumb
for anything. It's a lot dumb, yeah. That thing's hindered it more than it's helped it. However, this strikes me potentially, not entirely, but potentially like any of these patents you see show up for, like, Apple's got a patent out there for a space-time continuum machine, and it looks weird. And it's. I think this stuff happens all the time, and these products rarely percentage wise come to market. I think it's significant to notice anything they're putting up there, but I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't prototypey and some of the technology is important to patent, but maybe not at all what a final thing might look like. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think the reason I'm giving it a little bit more credence is that I think it's Sharp that does those weird shaped LCDs and that they were in talks to apparently. But yeah, I mean, if they're going to do a touchscreen thing, then they do need to have the little joysticks, and then maybe the buttons can be rearranged in different ways, and maybe there's some kind of haptic feedback that makes you feel like they're actual buttons. I don't know. We'll see. the you know, E3 will come soon enough, and they'll probably unveil the NX there. So
yeah, true.
Finally, last incredibly important piece of news: the loading screen minigame patent has expired at last. I don't know if you were a PlayStation gamer in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You were?
Oh, yeah. I bought a PS1 day one, had to take it back later that afternoon because the disc, the drive broke. Got another one, took it home, played Resident Evil there, played Silent Hill there, took that thing everywhere I went. Dude, PlayStation 1 and me, we got along good.
I bought my PlayStation 1 from Japan, an import. It was so expensive. It was ridiculous.
I thought you were... Well, wait, you weren't there then, though.
Oh, no. That was 95. I was in Japan from 99.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I had it... we got it, so the States didn't get it until... It was either late fall 95 or... I don't remember. Maybe it was the... Yeah. It may have been holiday 96 that we got it. But whenever that was, I went out there, waited in line, got on local news about waiting in line. Oh, yeah. It was a big deal at the time. And played the living crap out of that machine. Loved it.
Well, one of the launch titles was Ridge Racer, and Namco put in a version of Galaxian, which was an old arcade game from their stable. So they put a version of Galaxian into the loading screen. The loading was a little bit long for Ridge Racer, the initial one. And actually, I remember if you beat Galaxian in that loading screen, you would get a special car or something like that.
I remember that. Yep.
And they had that patented. So it probably wouldn't hold in court anyway, but no one else could use a mini game for a loading screen anymore. That was a tragedy. Now, of course, no one cares because loading screen aren't so big a deal anymore. Although I hear in some games, Fallout 4.
Yeah, Fallout 4 is pretty long on console. PC's not bad, though.
Yeah. But you know, when they're loading, you can just put out your smartphone and play on that. But
It's like they held the patent just long enough for technology to stop sucking. And now it's like a waste of money because, like, who would play a full game of Galaga in a fast loading game? Like, it's dumb. Yeah.
What? Finally, technology has stopped sucking. We're there. We've arrived.
Everyone quit worrying. It's good. We're all good.
All right. That was just a little tidbit from my childhood. From a long time ago. I was already a full-grown man. Maybe not full-grown. Somewhat grown man at that time.
I'm still not grown. So.
You're still not grown?
I'm working on it. I'm trying. I'm 6'4", and that may seem full-grown, but mentally I still feel like I'm stunted a little bit.
Aren't we all? Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for being on the show, Scott. Why don't you tell the lovely people listening where they can find more of the Scott?
Well, as part of our tradition on podcasts, we like to tell everybody what we're doing outside of our guest appearances here, and I'll do that now. So here's what I'm doing. You mentioned the Boop Show earlier. I would recommend people check it out. It is at frogpants.com/boop, B-O-O-P. Do a lot of some of the stuff that Patrick does, but mostly focused on the news. If you like it, let me know. Give me your feedback. And there's something else going on that I do a lot now, which is live streaming. Gaming every day. And I call it 4 o'clock Scott every day, Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Mountain Time. I don't know what that is in France, but you're all asleep, I think, man. But
No. It's 4 hours before now, which means it's not. Wait, what time is it for you now?
It's right now 12:17 p.m.
So in about 4 hours. So it's midnight.
Oh, it's midnight. Oh, it's not. You're up till 3, so you can, yeah. But anyway, I play video games. A lot of times it's stuff that the community has requested. Sometimes it's just stuff I'm into. Right now I'm going through some old catalog stuff that I haven't touched in a long time, trying to finish Wolf Among Us, which is fan-freaking-tastic. Part of what spawned that on is me having not finished it. Also, the Game Awards announcement that they are working on a Batman game and that Michonne game got me just craving a little bit of Telltale's sauce. So I'm kind of
wrong with that.
No, I love those games. So anyway, that among many other things. And then Saturdays, we have a big 3-hour stream called Experience Points where myself and John Jagger record. If you want to know more about all of that, just go to frogpants.com/Twitch and you'll find it all.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being here. My nickname is not Patrick. I didn't remember the name for a second there. It's not Patrick, and you can find me on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, and you can find the show at frenchspin.com. You'll also find another show there called The Phileas Club, where we get together and discuss the news from the world with people from different parts of the world, and we try to give you the vision, the view, and the cultural bias that we all have, but from different places. So we're all on on relatively equal footing. We also have a lot of fun there, even though we do talk about serious topics. So you can go check that out at frenchspin.com as well. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back hopefully in a couple of weeks, although it's the middle of the holiday period, so we'll see. But we'll be back at some point, and we'll talk to you then. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Johnny on the click. That was fast.
Well, you said ready.
I don't know. It was awesome. It was like, whoa. Patrick he's a efficient operator.
That is the name of my Cyndi Lauper cover band in high school.
That's pretty good. You played bass for them, or what'd you do there in that band?
For efficient operator?
Yeah.
Well, I was the only member, so I did everything.